Welcome to the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here. You can follow us on Twitter, at Steve Lehman, at Braden Gall. Julian Council producing. Just 2 days away from the Titans heading north to Foxborough to take on the New England Patriots, the defending Super Bowl champions and the most dominant franchise in all of sports for the last 15 or 20 years.
The forecast keeps looking worse, by the way.
Yeah.
Talk about another thing to worry about.
One of those things I'm happy about not being in Foxborough for. One of the few reasons. Dan Shaughnessy, I'll let you handle that. Dan Shaughnessy from the Boston Globe joining us here. Dan, thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time. We do appreciate it, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, Dan.
Doing pretty well. So I'm going to start with my first question is more just about us in the media, which is very self-serving, of course.
Sure.
As we like to be. And my question is do you get more flack from like fans from other markets or other teams or from Patriots fans when you say something about the Patriots team?
That's actually a very good question because, I don't know, no matter what you do here, it's they don't like it. So, it's either you're just setting it up so you can kill them either way or you're being, you don't believe it, or it's like nobody likes it. And obviously, when the town that's coming into town, the Titans in this case, not that popular there, but you guys know how this stuff works. I mean, you know, win a few games, build up the resume, and those things don't happen. But unfortunately, in my chair, for the last several years, the Patriots have had these incredibly easy early round games. And unfortunately for you guys, you fit right into the mold.
Dan, it's funny. I've done a handful of radio interviews this week, a few up in Boston, around the country, and I keep getting asked about two articles or columns that have been written in the last week, the Seth Wickersham piece on the breakup of the Patriots dynasty, and then your piece basically saying that the Titans have no chance up there. Aren't we making way too much of the written word here? I mean, ultimately, they're going to go out on the field on Saturday night,
right,
and the two teams are going to decide this thing, right?
Sure, but, the nature of football, they only play one game a week, and shows like your show and newspapers like ours, we're in the business of 24/7 putting stuff out there, and you get your talking points, and some more than others. I mean, if the Patriots hold serve and the Steelers beat the Jags, then the lead up here will be much different next week. There'll be a lot of talk about Mike Tomlin losing his mind, you know, in the late seconds of a game against the Patriots, their inability to ever beat New England or Brady, just how they pick on them and get into their heads and this kind of thing. But that team on paper has the talent to go with New England. And from what I can see, and I don't know football as much as you guys do, certainly, but your team does not. I mean, and again, the things that are just not in their favor. Now your running back's not playing, or one of your two running backs, I see, which is unfortunate. But, you know, getting outscored during the year and no playoff win in 15 years, and it just, you know, your quarterback with more picks than TD passes, and it was a great comeback against the Chiefs, you know. Good luck to you on that. I just don't feel it's a sustainable formula coming in here. And your coach is 0-6 against Belichick. So you tell me, how is all that translated into victory for the Titans?
Right. It's hard to see on paper. The Titans hope that their second half, obviously, they're building off of something. They've had injuries throughout the course of the year.
Yeah.
They hope they are bottling something that they can go up and do, obviously. I do want to ask you about, I guess, the other guy's piece, Seth, because so much talk has been made about that.
Yeah.
You are up there. You cover this team all the time, Dan. Is there anything to be made about a rift from ownership to the coach to the quarterback?
And, I believe
And
that.
What does that mean now?
Well, I mean, I believe that the thrust of that story is true. I believe there are hard feelings at the top. And, you know, 17 years guys together and the success and the egos and the aging and the decisions that have to be made, I think all that stuff is very real. It doesn't help you guys this weekend. It doesn't help anyone the rest of this year. The only blowback from that, in my view, would be if Belichick, for one reason or another, he has his back up so much that he doesn't want to coach here again. Now, he's under contract for next year, but we know Kraft's not going anywhere, and Brady has any kind of a power struggle, whatever, he has won that. My takeaway on that is that there was a plan to succeed Tom Brady, and he outlived it, and that then they were forced to make decisions, hard decisions, and coach didn't get his way, and in the subsequent, you know, fallout from the story coming out and then the denials and the you know, tsunami of lies that have been flown out since the whole story came out, I think that leads to hard feelings too, because basically the owner's saying, well, I didn't make that stupid trade for Garoppolo. That's all on Bill. And Brady's got to be saying, why is all this bad stuff about me in ESPN? Who's giving him that? That's got to be coming from Bill. So I think that the stories in themselves lend themselves to more hard feelings, which I do believe exist, but it's not going to help you guys Saturday night.
No, I tend to agree. If there's one organization in all of sports that's dealt with distractions in a perfect way, it's clearly the New England Patriots.
They're good with the gates.
Yeah, they know how to handle that stuff and win. They put it all aside for the common goal, and that's to win championships. There's no question about it. Dan Shaughnessy joining us here. And I'll ask you a question that I guess coaches have been making millions of dollars have tried to answer, and that is why is Dick LeBeau struggled, a Hall of Famer, struggled so much against Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and that offense? What do you expect the offense to look like and the game plan to look like, and how do you attack it? Again, coaches have been fired and made millions of dollars to try to solve that problem.
Well, I mean, you referenced the weather when coming into this segment, and I think it's going to be really warm here tomorrow, like high 50s tomorrow, which is like 60 degrees higher than we had last weekend. And I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember the Titans game in 04 when they came up here, and it was a great Saturday night, coldest night ever at Gillette. So you wouldn't want any part of that. But I think what you're going to have tomorrow, maybe that helps you guys. I mean, it should help a running game. It should be a mutters kind of game.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So that's probably good for the Titans, and maybe it'll slow down the aerial, the vertical game of the Patriots when they have it. But, the tenets are you don't blitz the Patriots, and you guys blitz, so that doesn't sound good. And that you don't establish the run against them, and you guys try to do that, so that doesn't sound so good. So I don't know, but I do know that there are certain people, that they really do pick on. Del Rio's one, certainly Tomlin's one, and there's great respect for LeBeau, and there should be. The guy's a Hall of Famer, and I remember when he was picking off passes for the Lions 1,000 years ago, and obviously knows his football. But you've got to change things up. I mean, the Steelers tried to do the exact same thing, cover Gronk with one guy. You can't do that. It's just stupid. And you're going to have to give up something somewhere. But, pressuring Brady and, making it difficult for him back there, that's been the only formula that's won. And it's easier said than done. So if you can figure it out a way to do without straight blitzing, good luck to you. But that's on the rest of your people, and your linebackers and D-backs and what sort of coverage you have back there. So, I mean, again, I really am hoping for a close game here. I would love to be wrong. You feel free to call me next week if the Titans win the game. We can talk for hours. Because these guys could use a dose of reality up here. The Patriots are not that good, fellas, but everybody else is terrible, and that's what we're seeing in the NFL this year.
Well, that's what I was about to ask you, is Dan, how does it feel to be so bored to cover AFC divisional?
It's weird. I know it sounds horrible, and we're very blessed up here, and we have all these playoff games, and they blend together. Which Super Bowl was that? Were we in Glendale? Or were we in Indianapolis? And it's stupid just how blessed our region is with these teams, and this one in particular with the level of success, and some of it's being in a really cheesy division, but most of it is, the coach and the quarterback and the stable ownership. So those principles that we talked about, that's the reason that they are. And in the gap in coaching, I've never seen greater. I mean, again, I was on another show in your region this week, and I can tell you, out of the gate, if you win the coin toss, make them take the ball. I mean, do people figure that out by now? They don't want the ball at the start of the game because they want the ball at the end of the first half. They have scored in the final minute of the first half, I think, in 11 of the last 12 games. I mean, so they're working the clock backwards to have the ball to crush you with a score at the end of the half and then get the ball and start the second half and the double score, which breaks your will to live. So, and even stupid things like the kickoffs. Don't kick the ball through the end zone. Kick it to the 2 and cover. Stop them on the 18. Everybody booms it through the end zone. They kick it to the 2 and then stop you at the 18. Why is it so hard to figure that out?
I don't know. Good point, Stan. You just said something, though, that really caught my attention. You said that you don't feel like this team is all that good. They've won 11 of 12 games, and I think, as I made this point earlier, that I think sometimes we lose track of the Patriots because they're so far ahead of the AFC East.
Yeah.
We pay attention to the other division races, and meanwhile, they just kind of get everything in order for the playoff run. Is this team not on par with what some of the other great Patriots teams have been?
I think by their own admission, the folks and the diehard fans around here would agree with what you just said, and I certainly think it. I mean, the early teams, and again, this is like the gluttony of riches here, but when they won in 03 and 04, that they were really good. That 03 defense, you know, you had Ty Lahr and McGinnis and Bruschi, and they even when they had Seymour and just more defensive stalwarts there. And Brady, he was obviously young, and they had everything. Lately, it's just been nobody. Everybody's afraid of him, and people make stupid decisions. I mean, they should have lost the last two Super Bowls. I mean, they're down 28-3 last year. You tell me you can't win that game. And 2 years before that, you know, Pete Carroll won the Super Bowl and said, "Nah, I don't think so. I think I'll try a slant pass in traffic from the one here with Marshawn Lynch watching it." I mean, stuff like that. But anyway, the long and short of it is they're in that division. They win their 12 games, and yeah, it's great. They've had a tremendous year by all standards. But the people who see him here every year know. I mean, I always say they're not that good right until the parade goes by my house. That's kind of how it works around here, you know. But they are vulnerable. A good team can beat them. Pittsburgh can beat them. And what I saw of Atlanta, I know it sounds silly, but that looked like a team that could beat
them. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I'm with you on Atlanta.
Because they're young and fast, and that's what they were for the first three quarters of that game last year.
That parade's a pretty good way to prove people wrong, though, Dan. I think I know your answer to this based off of what you've written and everything you just said. But is there any way that the Titans can win? Can you make a case that if the certain things fall in line that the Titans could go up there and win?
All right, so you kick off to them and they fumble and you get six right out of the jump there. And then they fumble again. But they have this weird thing. When they fumble, it always bounces back into their hands. I mean, all these things work for you. Pressure Brady. Don't be stupid. Don't keep doing the same stupid things. Don't panic at the sight of Belichick. Don't just, you know, lose your football acumen when you come into Gillette and see Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Do what you do and try to bother Brady. And they are vulnerable. They're not that good. And don't do the famed, you know, they bend but don't break. You know, get all your yards between the 20s and then freeze up and lose your minds when you get in the red zone. That's what everybody does.
Dan, always a pleasure, man. Keep up the good work. I've enjoyed your work for a long time, so it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks, Dan.
Hope we get a game. It's a pleasure talking to you guys.
Thanks, absolutely. Dude. Dan Shaughnessy from the Boston Globe. We'll react to that. A lot to get to from that interview when we come back. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Dan Shaughnessy, great there to talk with him on the program.
Yeah, fascinating.
Excellent job, Julian. Excellent job. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll talk with Josh Ward coming up in just a minute, but there's a lot to react to there. I really don't believe, because he writes that column, and if you read that column, and everybody's read it for the most part, especially in Nashville, and then you see the tweets, and like it looks incendiary. It looks like you're trying. Like, it's not a hot take. It's not clickbait. It's not trying to get you to react. It's not trolling. He just has been around this team for so – it's literally like – it's like picking Alabama in a playoff game. It's just – you've seen it too long. You've been around it too many times. You've seen it – like, listen to what he says. He goes, how do you beat the Patriots? Well, don't lose mentally by getting off the bus and looking and seeing Belichick and Brady across the street. You know, don't do stupid things and forget about how you're a football coach. I think that's a really interesting way to analyze it. Hey, don't lose the game sort of between your ears. Like, forget all the things you know about football when you go to Gillette Stadium. It's like things just disappear. I actually like that about Marcus Mariota. I don't think that would happen to him in this situation. I actually think Mike Mularkey is – I don't know if he's immune to that. I have questions about Terry Robiskie overthinking himself because I think he's overthought himself the entire year. And Dick LeBeau, for whatever reason, has just not done well against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick like most coaches have. So I think that was very matter-of-fact. I think that's just sort of – statements of fact in his opinion and not trying to be outlandish or incendiary.
Well, and if you go back even before the games last weekend, he was already kind of beating this drum that the only team that had a chance to beat the Patriots this weekend was the Chiefs. And I just think he believes that. As you said, he's seen this time and time again in the divisional round where they're just facing a team that doesn't really have a shot to go into Foxborough and win. And I think he just truly believes that's the same case here, whether it would have been the Bills or the Titans in this situation. It just happens to be the team located in our city. But to your other point, Braden, I think that's the one thing I feel confident about with the Titans is I don't think they're going to be in awe of the situation. And Kevin Byard had a great quote the other day, which, by the way, is kind of incendiary in itself, is he said, when asked about the chance to play Brady and them, he said, "I know I'm only in my second year, But this isn't a preseason game. This isn't the type of game where I can sit back and be like, man, that's Tom Brady or that's Rob Gronkowski. This is pretty cool. I got to go play. This is a playoff game. We got to win. He's like, my goal is to go out there and make Tom Brady look like Blake Bortles.
Which is not like his, like you said, it could be taken out of context if you take it the wrong way. It's.
I actually took it exactly that way, but
no, I'm not. I don't mean you. I mean like if you just hear, like you said, it could have been incendiary if taken out of context. Like I'm sure there's a guy walking around Boston right now going, I can't believe that safety thinks he's going to make Tom Brady look like. Well, that wasn't the point. The point was more about him,
yeah,
and the reflection on his moment of his career in that stage.
I think it also was a point about Blake Bortles.
Well, that's probably true. Now, but if LeBron James sucks, you know,
sure.
So can Blake Bortles suck too. 2011 Broncos. He mentions them. The 2013 Colts, and of course last year's Texans, where he just says, you know, this the Patriots have faced a lot of bad teams in this situation. And then you read the case he makes. He's like, your quarterback has more interceptions than touchdowns. You know, here are the two things you guys like to do. Dick LeBeau likes to blitz. Tom Brady kills the blitz. Titans like to run the football. Belichick always takes that away. Like he's making very sound, logical, rational arguments, but it's just so matter of fact because he's just like, that's why I asked him, like, are you bored now of the AFC divisional round? And it's sort of like Alabama in football in the SEC just being bored until like the SEC championship game or the Iron Bowl or whatever. Like they're bored until the LSU game. You know what I mean? Like there's just this moment. There's just and it doesn't mean that they're going to come out bored. As it like that's how good the New England Patriots
sure.
are. Is that they go through all the motions. And then when the switch needs to come on, it's on, and they win Super Bowls.
And they also have an ability to they bring in these new cast of characters. So it's not all the same guys who were there last year or the year before that. And so for them, this is their opportunity to do it as a team and come out. What's going to be fascinating to me, Braden, on Saturday night is it's clear the guys like Dan Shaughnessy are bored by this and bored by the divisional round in the AFC playoffs right now. Are the Patriots fans bored? When you walk into that stadium on Saturday night, is it going to feel like an atmosphere worthy of a divisional round? Because even Titans fans who don't believe they have a chance to win, I think are excited just about the fact that here we are, there's eight teams left, and our team is playing on Saturday night. Are Patriots fans really excited for their team to be playing Saturday night, or are they just looking forward to Pittsburgh next week and then a possible Super Bowl again?
No, I think it's Boston. I think they get excited about it. I think they're... Like their entire season starts on Saturday. Like they've been waiting for this day all year. Like they just expect this to be what happens. Like, oh, it's time to get to this. Oh, divisional round's here. Let's go get the tailgate ready. You know what I mean? I think it'll be a great atmosphere. I think they're going to be fired up because I think it's Boston. They're passionate about their Patriots. It's still Tom Brady. It's still Bill Belichick. It's still they're going for six. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah.
I think all that is still very much in play. So I don't. And this is what makes them special. There is no, they don't even like each other now in that facility, and it doesn't matter. Like, they don't even like each other, and it's like, we're going to put all that aside, and we're going to go out and crush your soul. And it's very much what Alabama is. Do any of the coaches ever leave Alabama and be like, yeah, I love Nick Saban? Like, no, they don't even like each other in the facility in Tuscaloosa either. But you put it all aside because there's one goal, the process in place.
Yeah.
And New England's the Alabama of the NFL, and they do the same thing. Now, I do like his point that relative to other Patriots teams, this one has maybe some more flaws, maybe isn't as talented, isn't as deep, some of the, you know, Tom's older, whatever. And I do think that there is, if you're trying to spin this all positively for the Titans, which is all we're doing here, I do think that Marcus Mariota is immune to the, you know, Taylor Lewan is immune. Like, what do we always say about the Super Bowl? As soon as you figure out it's just another football game, that's when you'll play your best football,
yep.
Right? Like, you got to get away from the pomp and the circumstance, and it's all about blocking and tackling. It's the same stuff you've been doing since you were, you know, 11 years old and in middle school. And I think Marcus is immune to that. I think Mike Mularkey might be a little bit immune to that. My concern is Terry Trubisky. That's my concern, is that he gets a little too cute with some play calling, and all of a sudden he's behind the chains, and he's trying to do too much, and all of a sudden he calls a play, and it backfires, and all of a sudden they're down 14-0. That's my concern. I think the other people on the roster, I think they're pretty capable of handling the moment and the stage.
Regardless of the outcome, the experience of Saturday night and being in that environment and on this stage is going to be good for this team, good for the quarterback, good for the young guys for a long time to come. It's interesting. One of the most asked questions to me is I've done sort of the radio circuit this week, talking Titans on a national level or in Boston, has been, how much do you think that the article about the rift in the Patriots locker room plays into this? And do you think you have a chance now, as someone who watches the Titans all the time, for them to go up there and win? And I don't think the rift has anything to do with it, because as you mentioned, they almost thrive in controversy. If it's Deflategate, Spygate, whatever you want to call this, Columngate, they seem to like that.
Name a player that's a, quote, bad apple, whatever,
right.
Like, down the list.
To me, the way the Titans go up there is kind of what Dan was saying. To me, I can get more specific. I think Jarrell Casey has to have a monster day. I don't think this is a game where you can blitz a lot and your outside linebackers are going to get there, because Brady just gets rid of the ball too quick. You need to get pressure from up the middle. You need to push guys back in his face. And even if you don't get to him, you disrupt his pocket. You get hands up, and you do. That's how you bother
him. I'm with you. Casey has to be the Pro
Bowler. I think Casey
has
to have an absolutely monster day. I think in the secondary, you have to tackle like madmen. They're going to complete some balls, but when they do, you have to tackle well. And then offensively, you have to have a great day from your offensive line and Derrick Henry, control the ball running, and when the plays are there, take a couple shots, and you have to convert them, which they haven't done. You hope all those things come together. That's the recipe. It's possible. It's maybe a long shot for it all to come together, but that's the recipe for the Titans to win.
On top of that, you just play, you know, controlled chaos, controlled emotion levels where you've used this bulletin board material all week that no one gives you a shot, but you don't go too far with it, right? Like, you play above your head a little bit emotionally, but not too much so that you're making mistakes, and you add that to the perfect recipe, and all of a sudden maybe there's a game in the fourth quarter, and then at that point maybe the weather plays a factor, or the ball bounces a strange way, or the referees make a call, or you never know, but it's a long shot, and people in Boston are bored. People down here should not be, though. It should be an exciting Saturday night. There's no question about that. People in Knoxville, very excited about their new head football coach. Jeremy Pruitt, of course, took the podium yesterday. We'll talk with Josh Ward from WNML as he joins us each and every week right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here on a Thursday edition, closing in on the Titans and the Patriots. Take a little break from that to talk with Josh Ward from WNML, although I am going to ask you a Titans question, Josh, because I did that last week. First of all, welcome to the show. You can follow him on Twitter, at Josh_Ward. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing well. Great to be with you.
I will ask, because we did this last week, sort of the interest level of the city of Knoxville in the Titans, now that they've come back and had the big win over Kansas City. Has anything changed? Is there more buzz? Or does anybody care? Or is it all about, like, what is Tyson Helton's offense going to look like?
Yeah, it's still all right. Jeremy Pruitt, now the national championship game is done. He's all in on UT. He's in Knoxville. But there is a little more excitement. And I don't know, based on seeing the Titans win this past weekend, I'm not saying that fans are more optimistic about the chances of winning up there in New England compared to last week, but there's at least more chatter about the possibility maybe than there was last week. I think it was about, hey, good job, they made the playoffs. Now that the Titans have won a game, there's at least some what-if talk. Again, bullet points 1, 2, and 3 are Tennessee, then Tennessee staff, then Tennessee's recruiting. Vols basketball, things are going well there as well, but I think that all kind of ties in together toward just Tennessee sports and fans feeling pretty good about things, so the Titans get grouped in with the positivity, I think, that's present in Knoxville right now.
Well, let's talk about Jeremy Pruitt's staff, because I was on with you yesterday, and the number one question I have is, what is the offensive identity going to be under Jeremy Pruitt? You're much closer to the situation. Do you have an answer to that question?
No, I don't, and that's a good question. I've asked recruits that, and I think this is a common answer for a situation like this, is that Tennessee's going to be multiple, which is a good way of getting out, meaning we're gonna do a number of different things. So much of it depends on what is Tennessee going to have at quarterback. Who is the Vols quarterback next year? What is the long-term outlook? Is it Jerry Garantano next year? What ends up happening with Quentin Dormady is a question. So the skill set of the quarterback is going to factor into what they want to do. With Tyson Helton, he takes on a bigger role. That, to me, is one of the biggest talking points with this new coaching staff for Tennessee. It's not just Jeremy Pruitt becoming a head coach for the first time, but it's Kevin Scher in a larger role as the defensive coordinator. So Pruitt and Scher together, along with Chris Rumpf, who's the co-defensive coordinator, they're going to have a lot of say in what's going on there. But on the offensive side, Tyson Helton now has a larger role than he did at USC and at Western Kentucky. So I like a lot of what he's done in the past related to who he's been around, but now there's more responsibility on Helton to get the quarterback situation fixed and to get the offense going in the right direction. Does Juwan Jennings come back? So I think there are a lot of sub-questions as well. But to answer your question on offense, I think we're waiting to see what that's going to be, and I think that's because we're waiting to see who the quarterback is going to be for Tennessee.
Josh, obviously the last couple of weeks, Jeremy Pruitt has been spending most of his time with Alabama getting set for the college football playoff and the national championship game. Where does he stand right now in terms of finishing off the recruiting class as he gets set towards the February signing date and sort of getting back to Tennessee? I mean, how much has he, since the initial signing date, I guess, how much time, if any, has he put in on his now current job as Tennessee head coach?
One thing that probably helped, or at least even things out related to the competition, is that there has been the dead period going on. So communication, and with the dead period, you can still communicate with prospects. It's just not face-to-face. So downtime, but when free time was available to work on his job at Tennessee, he could still do that by phone, by internet, all that. And this past weekend, Tennessee picked up a commitment from a four-star linebacker, J.J. Peterson, who at one time had Alabama number one. He's a Colquitt County Rush Prost kid. And he's actually visiting this upcoming weekend. So he committed before his visit to Tennessee. So that was a nice get for the Vols. They're in pretty good shape, I think, for a first-year coach and first-year staff that's trying to put everything together in a 4 to 5 week period of time. We have less than 4 weeks to go until the February 7th signing day. This is not going to be a class that next year, Tennessee probably will have a more highly rated class. But I think this year's group has a chance to finish stronger than I would have predicted 5 weeks ago when Jeremy Pruitt was hired, because they landed a JUCO tight end that strongly considered Alabama and Texas A&M. They're in good shape with some highly touted players like Elijah Griffin, former UCLA commit. If they can land one or two big-time prospects, then from a ranking standpoint, they have a chance to be better than I probably would have thought, and some pieces to build around heading into next year. But a lot of the recruiting, it's not just for what they're going to do in 4 weeks. A lot of it is for 2019. They'll have a bunch of 2019 kids coming on campus over the next few weeks, starting this weekend, to try to get started next year. So there's only so much I think you can realistically do in less than 2 months to put together a class. That's why so much of next year, I think, will be about starting to try to close that gap with Georgia, which is, to me, clearly leading the way in the SEC East.
Josh, obviously a lot of stories out there about Juwan Jennings and how everything went down and the whole rehab process and his commitment to the program and all that stuff. Is it a sign of desperation that they want him back? Is it just trying to help a kid get back on track? Is it, you know, is there anything more to that? Or is it you know, what do you make of that story and how are Tennessee fans reacting to Juwan Jennings probably being back on the team?
Well, you can say it's about helping a young man in his development, but there would not be that desire to help him if he weren't as talented as he is. And if you watched Tennessee's offense last year when he went down, it had major problems. Maybe the offense would have been just as bad with Juwan on the field, but we'll never have a chance to know because he was injured in the first half. And I thought of all the injuries Tennessee dealt with individually, just choosing one, I thought that was the most crippling to Tennessee, to not have the one really proven playmaker in the passing game there last season. So I would say that if Juwan does come back to Tennessee's football team, the obvious reason why is because how good he is and how big the need is at that position at wide receiver. Long term, they might be okay there. Alante Taylor's a nice part of this signing class that could help right away. Players like Marquez Callaway, Brandon Johnson can be good wide receivers, but Juwan has proven that he's a good player in the SEC. So that, to me, is what it would be about. And I would imagine that he has a short leash if he were to come back to Tennessee, and we still have 8 months to go to see if that can happen for him to be on the team when the season actually begins. But if you can help him and his direction in life, that's great. But the reason he would get that chance if it happens, is because of how good he has been for Tennessee and how much of a need for talent they have right now.
Jeremy Pruitt's got room to make one more hire on the staff. It looks like that would probably be a wide receivers coach, Josh. Do you have any inkling on where or who they might go to there?
Well, there will be a connection to Jeremy Pruitt, I can guarantee you there, and I think they'd like to stick with Southeastern connections with that hire. And you're right, the expectation would be you bring somebody in to coach receivers. One coach that is on the staff is Brian Niedermeyer, who has not actually had his position confirmed, so that leaves you a little wiggle room with what you want to do. Tennessee wanted to go get McClendon from South Carolina, but he gets promoted to the coordinator position there on offense for South Carolina, so that left Tennessee still looking for that 10th assistant. But I would expect that that's done very soon. I thought they might have that done by yesterday. Obviously, they did not, but they're leaving their options open with a couple of positions, wide receivers and tight ends, depending on how this closes out. But it's a theme throughout the staff. If you look, you have a lot of Southeastern connections, some right in the SEC, and a lot of strong connections to Jeremy Pruitt, which is often going to be the case, but I think especially so with Tennessee staff.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, at Josh_Ward. Always a pleasure, my friend. Enjoy the weekend. Stay warm.
Hey, you got it. Yeah, we have the 60 degrees for 2 days here, and then it's back to freezing temperatures. I think we're going from 64 to 32, so it's like an NCAA tournament here in the next 2 days.
Thank you, Josh.
Hey, you got it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we're obviously doing that one day early, as we normally do with Knoxville. That will happen tonight, it seems like, right? 6 a.m., I believe, unless things have changed. I believe 6 a.m. is when tomorrow morning is when the official winter storm watch.
I'm going to get it on back-to-back days. We're going to do it here, and then the high in Foxborough on Saturday is supposed to be like 55 degrees, but it's at 10 a.m., and then it just slowly drops for the rest of the day. So I'm going to land in Foxborough about that time. So I'm going to spike back up in temperature and then just watch it drop again on me for the second straight day. So
you get to watch the storm move in twice then.
Right.
So I'm sure
I'm going to be under the weather come about Monday.
That's very exciting stuff for you. Want to address – I want to get to Juwan Jennings, and is this a sign of desperation for Tennessee or something else? I want to get to that when we come back. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You're listening to 102.5 Live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, having deep conversations during the commercial break about being athletes and life and all kinds of stuff. And Juwan Jennings, listen, we have to preface this conversation about Juwan Jennings with, like, listen, this is a young person we're talking about here. This is a kid, and we're not personally attacking his character. I want to make sure that's all very clear because – If we were all judged on our actions that we did when we were between the ages of 18 and 22, whether that's in college or not, I don't think any of us would have a clean, perfect resume there.
Sure.
Now, I'm not suggesting like we should all go out and commit felonies, but
no, he gets a pass for maybe some poor judgment or maybe not being as mature as a lot of us adults who are driving to work or sitting here in the studio are looking at the situation. He gets a pass for that. But at some point, it's also on Juwan Jennings to grow up a little bit and realize what's in front of him. He has an opportunity over the next year. If he can pull it all together and come back and be a productive member of this Tennessee team, be a good teammate, first of all. Be a good teammate.
Which, by all accounts, he has not done.
Do the things that you have to do to be a student athlete, like go to class and go to practice and be a part of the team, and then produce. If he does that, he's going to make a lot of money to play a game very long. That's the opportunity in front of him. But if he fails to do those things, he's going to have wasted that opportunity. And, you know, I don't begrudge him because he's a young guy and he's a kid. And so you give him a pass for maybe not making all the right decisions up to this point. But at some point, you run out of chances. And as a college athlete, here's your opportunity. So I hope the people who are around Juwan Jennings and I hope the people of Tennessee get in his ear on that a little bit. Because, Juwan, here's your chance. You have 12 more months to figure this out and prove exactly who you are as a person and as a player. And if you do that, you're going to be set. If you don't, you failed.
It's literally like a lottery ticket from God, and you have an opportunity that very few people have. And frankly, I hope that Jeremy Pruitt and the coaching staff is going about it the right way to help facilitate his growth so that he does get to the league, because you want to see kids mature and do better and be better. Like, that's just – everybody roots for that. No one's rooting for people to, like, make mistakes. And let's also be very clear, this is not a criminal we're talking about here. We're just talking about a little immaturity. It's not that big of a deal. But it's frustrating when you see an individual who has so much God-given ability, so much talent, and an opportunity in front of them to change their life forever, and you go – Just go to class, man. Like, it's not – I realize that in the moment, it's a lot of work. You're being asked to go to practice and to class. Like, I get it.
But go to practice, too.
Just go to practice. Show up for your teammates.
It's not just like this is a guy who knows he's got so much talent and he doesn't want to do the school thing, to borrow a line from Cardale Jones. He didn't go to practice at times. He didn't rehab to get his injury back the way it should have been.
He didn't do anything that required
any level of effort at all, according to the people over there. And that would terrify you if you're an NFL GM or somebody who ultimately could change this guy's life forevermore.
Yeah, and again, it also speaks to, again, I think Josh Ward put it very diplomatically there. He said, you can call it trying to help a kid get back on the right path, and in your heart of hearts, you want to believe that's Jeremy Pruitt's first priority and goal, but it's not. His priority is to win football games, and if Juwan Jennings helps him win football games, then that's going to be his priority. What you hope in that process is that you're also looking out. Like people like to rip on John Calipari all the time for sort of his methods, right? He recruits one and dones and all this stuff. But John Calipari is very committed to doing what's best for his student-athlete, for his player. Like, whether that's going pro or whether that's coming back to Kentucky or whatever, he's very committed to making sure he gives what he thinks is the best advice to that individual for their family and their life and their world. And to do that for Juwan Jennings, it's going to be more than just giving him 13 targets on every Saturday next year. Like, it's going to have to be more than that, because you can't just not rehab your injury, not show up to practice, not show up to class, have all the stories we've heard about Juwan Jennings, and just let all that disappear, and then just say, hey, go out there and catch passes on Saturday, because it's not going to help him get drafted. It's not going to help him change his world for the better. And it can help the Tennessee team, certainly. There's a selfish motive there for Tennessee, obviously. And we would not be having this conversation if he was an average football player. That unfortunately is the point. And talent trumps everything in this country for the most part.
There's no question. You hope both things can happen. You hope he can come back and be a huge part of Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt's first team there, and that he figures all this stuff out and corrects his life. But if he was a backup, if he was a walk-on and made any of the decisions he's made up to this point, he doesn't get this opportunity. So it's clear it's happening because of the talent and the star potential and what he can do for a new football coach if he lives up to
who
that
has
potential.
A severe need at offensive playmaker.
Absolutely.
So I like you said, you root for all young people to sort of figure things out, find the right way, and to be successful. I don't know if you live a world where you're like rooting against people like that. I don't understand that. It doesn't make much sense. It's not a very healthy way to live life. But it doesn't mean we can't step back and say, you know, again, and there's a delicate balance here, because we're very sensitive to, you know, young people and being immature. And like I said, if you would have judged me when I was 18 to 22, I got a long list of things that I would have done differently and been better about when I was that age. So it's not a condemnation of your character or whatever, but you're like, God, dude, you want to shake him and be like, dude, you've got such an unbelievable opportunity. Just go to class, man. Just go to practice. Just do your rehab, and you'll be great. And you'll have an opportunity that very few individuals ever get.
It's important to be patient and allow people to grow at their own pace and realize their potential. But at the same time, there also comes a level of where you run out of patience and you run out of chances. And that's what I fear Juwan Jennings is pressing upon now, is he's getting to that territory where he's going to pass the point of no return. And for his God-given ability, it appears to be to play football, to be a great wide receiver. And if you blow that in college and never reach that level and never get to the next level where you can make paychecks, I mean, that is a life-altering decision you could be making right now. And that's where the patience runs thin. And that's where I hope other people get in his ear. And he begins to understand the opportunity in front of him right now.
And the other people in the ear is another thing. I don't think you can call the entire previous coaching staff for Tennessee innocent in this situation either. If Butch Jones is a guy who is allowing certain behavior to continue to go on or whatever, he's complacent in, or complicit in that and is a part of that problem, then some of that failing falls on Butch Jones as well. So that to me is where Jeremy Pruitt can't fail Juwan Jennings. And that is as strange as it sounds, because I'm very much of the belief that every football coach in college football, especially at the Power 5 level, is a points on the scoreboard job. Like, your job is to score points more than the other guy. You get paid millions of dollars for that, not to raise young leaders of the community. That's an added bonus if you're a good person and do that too. But you cannot foster an environment where you continue to allow this stuff to happen. And I think Butch Jones is probably that coaching staff. There's some people on that coaching staff that were probably a little guilty of that. And that's where I'm hopeful that Jeremy Pruitt is different than that. And so I don't want to put 100% of the blame on Juwan. Sometimes you need good people around you to sort of help guide and steer and provide leadership. And I don't know if he got that from the previous coaching staff. So we'll see if Jeremy Pruitt and those guys wanted to do that as well. So when we come back, Steve Cavendish going to join us, talk a little Titans. We'll get back to the playoff game. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.